This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Episode 106 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Erin Campbell. My guest today is the founder and CEO of Puka Trade, a website which has radically changed the way that we trade and connect with one another. He's also a big EDH fan, and I found out a master seamstress. He is Eric Freytag. Hello.
Hey, Erin. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
You're welcome. You didn't know that I knew you were a seamstress, did you?
I didn't know that.
Okay.
But it's true, yeah. You saw the photo of this shirt that I mangled while I was trying to sew back together.
Yes. I do research on all of my guests prior to my interviews, and I will look at your Facebook, and I will look at your LinkedIn, and whatever I can find about you, basically. And I was looking at your page, and nothing really seemed out of the ordinary. I was like, all right, he likes the environment. He likes dogs. What did he do to that shirt?
I don't know. This was this tank top that I wear all the time, and it's been super hot in California, so I put it on the other day and realized that there's like this 3-inch long tear going down the left side of the shirt, and I've just kind of been like ignoring it for the longest time, but finally I was like, nope, not going out with torn clothing. I'm gonna sew this thing up. And so I kind of sat down and got to it and thought I was doing a fantastic job, and finally flipped it over when I was done, and it was just like the most horrible zigzag mess.
Can't even do that, so you're a step ahead of me. I admit I lack a lot of those basic domestic skills. Like, I'm still, part of me is still convinced that I'm even doing laundry wrong. Like, there are times where I will do the laundry and be like, are the clothes supposed to do this? I don't, and I'm 31. So,
all I do on that front is separate the whites from the darks. I don't really know why I do that, but I just hear you're supposed to, and it's kind of been working for me. So,
all right, yeah, I do that too. So I think we're on the same page there.
All right, good.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Like I said, I was very surprised. Your community manager, or one of them, is somebody that I play with at F&M, Vinny. Adorable. Yeah. And he approached me after I got back from the Community Cup, and he said, hey, and he was so cute. He goes, I work for this site called, maybe you've heard of it, Puka Trade. And I'm like, well, I don't live in a cave, so yes. And I know what Puka is. I'm on the Puka. I use the Puka. And he had said that you guys were looking for opportunities to get your name out there. And I love the site. So of course I jumped on board, and here we are.
Yeah, nice. Well, yeah, Vinny's been with us for about a month now, and he's awesome. He's definitely like a go-getter. He does a really great job of just like doing reach out to people in the community and asking them if they have any questions, helping out wherever he can. And yeah, it's been really awesome to have him on board. That's such a cool coincidence that you guys know each other.
Yeah, it's a very, very small world, actually. And he's very positive, too. Like, I don't think I've ever really seen him in a bad mood or take it out on an opponent or anything like that. He's just a very good guy.
That's so cool. That's really critical, you know? I think that's a great way to just be in the world.
I'm sure it also helps you to know that you have such positive people around you.
Yeah, it does. It does. I think it's really important. I mean, I think one of the things that's gotten us all so far is that level of positivity, where we kind of just make the best of every situation and just kind of keep everything moving forward. And I think that's really important. I think that's really how I've approached the founding of this project, and I agree that it's a really important quality to have,
especially when you're working on a startup, because you definitely don't want pessimists around you that are, you're at a startup, you're like, oh, this thing's gonna crash, I'm already looking for a new job. You kind of want people that are looking to keep the mood up and overcome the hurdles together. All right, we got this, we're gonna make this a thing. And yeah, I can see that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I feel really fortunate that everyone on board does have that. I think there are definitely challenges to any business or any startup in general. And, having people who are in it for the long haul just like gives you a peace of mind knowing that, they're not going to run at like any sign of adversity. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. I want to talk about you before we talk about the Puka, because I feel like I don't know a lot about you, and I hope to fix that. So from what I determined, you currently live in Oakland, California. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that where you grew up?
It's not. No, I actually, I was born in Pennsylvania, actually, on the East Coast.
Oh, wow.
And then, Yeah, had a short stint in Texas, but by the time I was in first grade, I was living in Washington, in the Seattle area. And actually, that's where I grew up until, you know, very recently. I went to college in 2000, and by 2006 or so, actually, it was 2008, I'm sorry, that's when I moved down here to Oakland.
Okay. Now, what was the reason for all the traveling? Were you in a military family, or...?
No. My folks grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and after they got married and they finished their school and stuff, they wanted to relocate. They had enough of urban living and kind of wanted to get out. So, they kind of followed a job opportunity that my father had in Texas, and then they weren't into Texas at all. So they followed another one up to Washington. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds like there was a lot of traveling, but actually, I feel like I just grew up in Seattle, in the Seattle area, for pretty much my whole life. I spent, I guess, like 16 years there, 16, 17 years, maybe a little bit less. But yeah, for most of my upbringing, that's where I was. Mm-hmm.
Was it hard for you as a child to move around constantly? Like, was it hard to make friends or put down your roots?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I really feel like I just put roots down in the Seattle area. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really feel like a challenge in my life at all.
Mm-hmm. And what was it about Seattle that you felt the most comfortable in?
Well, definitely not the weather.
I know, I've been there.
Yeah, it's rough. I mean, it rains like 280 days a year up there. It's pretty wild.
It rains so much that you guys don't even really believe in umbrellas. I was there for a friend's wedding one year, and it was raining, and I had made a comment. I was like, oh, crap, I left my umbrella at home. And she's like, why would you bring an umbrella? And I'm like, because it's raining? And she's like, no. She's like, I got a hood, I'm fine. And
just doesn't even... I know, that's very true. People just deal with it up there. They just get used to it. But, yeah, it also kind of does like the half-assed sprinkle all the time where it's just kind of drizzling day in, day out. And at some point, you're like, God, just rain, and then move on to the sun part.
Like a perpetual state of rain.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I wasn't too into that. But Seattle has a lot of amazing redeeming qualities as well. I mean, it's certainly beautiful. The quality of the air is really high. There's no, like, air pollution at all. It's, you know, very green and beautiful. For anyone who likes outdoorsy type stuff, there's a ton to do up there. And, the people in the Pacific Northwest are really, like, kind, nice people. And I really liked it up there. I got a lot of love for the Pacific Northwest. But also happy to have moved on.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's also a great place to be if you're creative in any way. Like if you're into theater or art or writing or anything, that really is the place to be where, you know, you're going to find somebody who's either into what you are or find people to do that with. That's just a really great place for it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's certainly a good place for magic as well.
Absolutely. So did any of your current interests, like magic, trading, finance, take root at an early age?
I definitely think so. I got into magic when I was in my eighth or ninth grade, so at a pretty young age. And that was like 95, 96.
Isn't it crazy to think about?
It is really, really weird to think about having a hobby for that long. It's kind of mind-blowing, actually, but...
It's crazy when you... I know, I tend to have those feelings when reprints come out, and you get, like, the young kids that are like, ew, Siobhan Dragon, this card is terrible! I'm like, listen, you're a little bastard. I had loved Siobhan Dragon. I had the original art. Yeah.
Don't you ever say that about Siobhan Dragon. Yeah, I always get that moment when cards become obsolete, you know? Yeah. Like, how they just printed Reclamation Sage, and I'm like, oh, there's no more Ukatabi orangutans out there then.
I remember that card.
Yeah, back in Visions, that was that's like a 95, 96 gem there.
Visions, I remember. I think it was City of Solitude. That was a card, and you're taking back.
That was right around the time that things started really getting good with Magic. Visions, Mirage, Weatherlight. They were coming up with really kind of creative, cool concepts, and that was a good time for MTG.
So you started in the eighth grade.
Yeah, a buddy just introduced me to the game. He had been playing with his older brother or whatever, and it just pretty instantly became like the thing that we did, you know? We would like play after school, sometimes play in the lunchroom, whatever, and like it became like an awesome hobby for me and a few of my other friends growing up to share in. And I don't know. I mean, there's a million amazing things about this game. I mean, the way that it challenges you intellectually, I think, is so incredible. I mean, even today in my life, like, I find myself exercising the muscle of my brain the most by far when I'm playing this game. And especially in like a complex board state like EDH, where there's six folks playing and there's, you know, cards everywhere and you have to keep track of it all. And God knows how many cards you have in your hand. It's just like, it literally pushes the limit of your intellectual capacity to like make the best play or to hold it all. And I really feel like I'm actually just not challenged that way in any other way in my life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's always sort of filled that role. And it's something that I've always loved, even from early on.
Mm-hmm. Were there any other games that you geeked out on, or was Magic your only vice?
Oh, man. You know, it kind of was my only vice. I mean, I got pretty into StarCraft for a while. And Warcraft as well, just like the old school Warcraft that was the precursor to StarCraft. But you know, honestly, beyond that, not too much. I mean, I think I put most of my nerd focus into that game, into Magic for sure.
Did you ever quit or take a break, or was it?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually took an 8-year break from 2000 to 2008. I stopped playing during that time, and you know, just kind of focused on other things. I was kind of like checked in here or there, but never really was like playing games or like buying cards or anything like that. And finally, though, in 2008, I did check back in when Zendikar was released.
Good set.
And I was blown away. I was like, this is so incredible. They've done such a good job. I thought Landfall was such a cool mechanic in that it solved something that something I thought was a really unfortunate, kind of irritating thing about the game of Magic, which is where in the late game, you draw lands and don't want them. And I was like, oh, how perfect. They've converted those into effects where you can use them to like make your creatures bigger or produce mana or steal someone else's creature. And I was like, that's a brilliant mechanic. And I kind of went nuts and I got back into it. I went to 3 pre-releases in 2 days. And that's pretty much how I got back in. Mm-hmm. And it was right around that time that the idea for Pupa Trade was born, because it wasn't a time where I had a lot of extra, financial, I guess money just lying around or anything. And, one thing I definitely noticed is how expensive cards have become. Mm-hmm. They definitely, over that decade, have increased in value. And, there was 8 years worth of cards that I wanted, but I didn't want to have to pay for them. So, I still had my collection, so I tried to do some trading to acquire a lot of the cards I wanted. But trading in person had a lot of problems, like we all know. Like, you may go to your local game store and trade with the same seven people, every week. And eventually it's like, I know what's in your binder and you don't have what I want.
Yeah.
And, it's just difficult, So I turned to the internet, assuming there would be someone who had resolved this online, but was shocked to find that no one really had. I mean, there was a couple like glorified forums where people were, posting these massive, like, 10,000 card lists that they were pouring over to, like, negotiate a trade basically at the speed of email. And then that would either succeed or fail. And there's just, like, no oversight and I didn't feel like there was any, like, thought or design that had been attributed to it. I said this should exist. And it's kind of that's how Puka Trade was born.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a BA in film and rhetoric studies. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
What is rhetoric studies?
Rhetoric, it's basically the art of communication.
Okay.
Or I guess you could say the science of communication, depending on how you looked at it. I was more on the kind of artistic side because I was more interested in film. Mm-hmm. That's definitely what I studied. I'm interested in communication, but I really love film. Mm-hmm. I think film is a really fascinating art form in that it's so collaborative, Mm-hmm. If you look at the credits of any given movie, you see thousands of names on there, and it's like, I can't think of any other art form where that many people get together to create a vision and a final product. And I don't know, I really love film, even to this day. And that's what I was interested in college. Mm-hmm.
So tell me how you go from that being your focus and that being your passion to suddenly being the CEO of a company. So you find this need, you find that there's something missing in the community and you want to fill that void and fill that niche. What was your path? Like, how did you get started? Did you have like a business plan? Did you have a vision? What were you thinking?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that there's any, it's not like there's a straight line from film to Puka Trade. Mm-hmm. I think I have always been the type of person that looks for a need and then tries to resolve it. I think that always, if I look at just my behavior patterns over the last 30 some years, I can see that. I can see myself doing that over and over again. And I think this is no different from that. Like, I wanted a way to trade. And I was sure that a lot of people did it as well. And I sort of had a vision for what I felt would be a more beautiful one. So I kind of just set about building it. One of the things that was really critical to me with PukaTrade is that the way that we trade on PukaTrade kind of mirrors the way I and my friends traded. And you probably have a similar experience. Like, when I trade with my friends, we don't sit down and like whip out our phones and come to exact dollar amounts and negotiate or haggle the best deal we can get. You know, if someone like is flipping through my binder and they see cards that they want, it's just like, yeah, just take them. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, you need a Maelstrom 8, Archangel, take it. Just take it and remember it. And next time I'm building a deck, I'll take a peek at your binder and, you know, we'll do something roughly equivalent. And, you know, I think that's such a joyful way to exchange between friends. It really feels like, you know, the act of giving and receiving gifts. And it was really important to me that PukaTrade was structured in the same way. And I realized that it's actually really simple to do that. As long as you sort of have this numerical tally of who has contributed to the community, that they have basically an expectation of how much they can expect to receive. So that's kind of how the whole idea was born. It feels really good in that way. And I don't know if you know this, but it's essentially like a gift economy. It's a functioning and thriving economy where all we're doing is giving gifts to one another. And it feels incredible. It's so fun. I really, really am proud of how far it's come and really excited to kind of, you know, be in this community and be a part of it in this way.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the hurdles that you encountered when you were trying to get PukaTrade off the ground?
Well, I do not have a technical background. So, I don't have any history in writing code or web development or anything like that. And I actually tried to learn it. There was a period where I sat down and took some classes to try to teach myself to code, but very quickly I realized that it was so much deeper than I was prepared to go. I enjoyed it. There were elements of it that I enjoyed, but, you know, I really enjoy communicating with people. I mean, that goes back to, I guess, the rhetoric and film side. But I really like having actual personal interactions with people, and I found myself kind of like unwilling or unable to educate myself as much as I needed to in order to build a website as complicated as PukaTrade. That was a challenge early on, finding the right team. I actually went through a few different people before I found the guys that are all on the team now. And that was a challenging time. It definitely was. The kind of the stops and the starts and like beginning a relationship with someone and then ending it and then kind of feeling like you got to start over from scratch. Having to do that a couple times was definitely rough. It was a challenge. I feel super lucky in the way that it was resolved. Back in April of last year, I did a crowdfunding project through Indiegogo to try to raise money to hire a developer to build PukaTrade. And during that time, I got an email from this guy named Mitch Trail. And he basically was like, hey, we saw your site PukaTrade. I saw you're doing this crowdfunding campaign. That's so cool. We really like what you're doing. He's like, look, kind of have this network of three or four people who all write code, and we play Magic every Friday. You should stop by and say hi. I did, and we hit it off so well. All of us became like such good friends so quickly. It was so easy. And as soon as the Indiegogo project succeeded, we basically sat down and got cracking. And within a few months, we exited the beta stage of development for PukaTrade. The rest is history. That's where we are. That's how we got to where we are today. And so I feel super fortunate that I have these guys on my team. They're all fantastic at what they do, really talented, dedicated guys. And so while it started off with a bit of a challenge, I think we've come to a pretty incredible place here. Mm-hmm.
What kept you going through those challenges? Like, were you, you know, what made you, you know, we were talking about being optimistic and believing in something better and believing something could work. You know, what was it that kept you going? You know, instead of going, oh, this isn't going to work, or oh, we're done, we should wrap it up. You know, was it just your attitude, or did you just believe that this could work, or what was it?
Yeah, I think it was probably a combination of both, but mostly the belief in the strength of the idea. Mm-hmm. I really believe that this is an incredible way for people to be exchanging. And I think it was always important to me to kind of like see the baby steps that it was taking, and see how at every one of those stages, there was positive feedback from the people who were on the site. I mean, even in the beginning when we just had 300 or 500 people trading on the site, the people who were actually using it were nuts about it. And, you know, they love to trade on it. Throughout every step of this, I've honestly been getting so much positive feedback from people who trade on the site. And I think that was hugely instrumental in keeping me focused and reinforcing my belief that this is a beautiful thing. Without all that positive feedback, I'm not positive we would be here today, actually. Mm-hmm.
Do you take criticism well? Like if somebody says to you, I don't care for your site, or you could do this better, are you okay with that?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. Yeah, and we do get that too, and that's fine. And honestly, I take that as a way that we can make it better, depending on what the criticism is. Like, I like to hear that stuff. And we've had a lot of it throughout, the whole time. I mean, back in the day, like before we exited beta, I don't know if you saw the site back then, but it was basically just like this grid. It was like a grid of these, like, it was basically like an Excel spreadsheet that was online.
I remember.
It looked terrible. It was functional. It did work, but like there was no design to it. There was no user experience. And, I definitely got a lot of feedback around that, and I knew it was all true. It's been really helpful actually for people to give any kind of feedback, and I try to respond to every single email or user voice ticket that comes through, or every tweet. Like, I read it all and I do my best to respond to it because I think it's really important. Like, I want the site to be as good as it possibly can be, more than anyone. And I think to achieve that, it's super important that we all listen to the criticism that people have about it. Mm-hmm.
If you had to create a progress report or a report card for Puka Trade as it stands right now, what would it say? Like, what do you think the site does well, and what do you think are some things could use some work?
Well, that's a good question. I definitely think there are some things that need work. I mean, there's basic things like we got to get foreign cards on there. We got to get cards of all condition, not just near mint, on there. We got to get support for quantity. We want to do digital cards as well. We want to get Modo on there. There's a lot of things that kind of feel like we really just should have them that we don't have yet. And, those would, I guess, be negative marks on the report card, because we got to do it, and we want to. I'd say that the reality, though, is that some of those things are just so massive. You know, you look at like something like condition, or like, okay, well, we'll just support cards of all condition. Like, that's a feature that's like necessary and would be incredible for sure, but it kind of like touches everything on the site. It's like actually a massive, massive time commitment from a development standpoint. And, we want to do that, we plan to. A lot of it is just about having the time and the resources and to be able to sort of afford the development that's required for that stuff. Those are some of the challenges. I mean, we'd like to be in here, honestly, 5 days a week. That's what the goal is here. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to just be working on Puka Trade full time, just, iterating every day, every week, just releasing tons of features, tons of fixes, just making it bigger and better all the time. The reality is that, these guys are, they're highly paid professionals that live in Silicon Valley, and, they deserve to be compensated in full for the work that they put in. So what that means is that there's sort of a limit to how much Puka Trade can afford, how much development time. Mm-hmm. We are making a ton of progress there. We are in here part-time, and we're always taking steps forward, and that feels really good, too. I'm going to give us an A. Because I know there's challenges, and there's definitely work ahead, but I still actually believe that we're killing it. With the resources that we have, you know, what we've been able to accomplish so far, I think is really incredible.
Mm-hmm. What metric do you use to define success? Like, I know for me, like when people say I have a successful podcast, I don't know how many listens I get. I don't know how many downloads I get. I don't know how many subscribers I get. My metric is love. You know, as long as people keep telling me they love the show, as long as I go to events and people say I love what you do, that's what keeps me going. That's what I point to and say, this is how I know my show is successful. What do you use to determine Puka Trade being a success? And to help you say, I am good at this and this is a successful project?
I think I use a number of things. And I think the quantity and quality of positive feedback that we get is definitely a huge part of it. I think that's absolutely a metric. For me, like, numbers are important too. Like, I heard this figure that there are 25 million Magic players worldwide. Mm. That's so many people playing cards out there. And I got to believe that at least 50% of them or more would want to be trading on PukaTrade. So, I mean, we have 16,000 people trading on the website right now, which is awesome. I love picturing all those people in one room. And I love, next time you're at a GP with 2,000 people, think, okay, PukaTrade has 8 times this many people trading on it. It's kind of cool. I think I use that as a metric for success. But I also, in terms of future metrics, like, I want to get as many Magic players as possible. I want to get 100,000. I want to get 1,000,000. I want to get all of us trading on the site in this way. So I think numbers are a big part of it for me. Mm-hmm.
And how do you plan to reach those 25 million people? Like, what's your approach?
Well, I think at this point, we just have to do a lot of outreach. You know, the reality is this is somewhat new. You know, we've only been around for, you know, a year and a half now, which in the scheme of things is not that long. And so there's still a lot of people that haven't heard of us. There's, I get this feedback all the time where people, you know, sign up, make an account, do some trades, and then they shoot me an email and they say, I can't believe I didn't know this account, this website existed until recently, you know? And, in a large part, that's, I think that's my fault. That's, the responsibility rests on my shoulders in that one, because I got to get the word out. I got to let everyone know that we're here. I think that any way that we can, incentivize people to spread the word or use powerful tools like social media to get the word out is definitely, kind of something that I need to be exploring a little bit more. Mm-hmm.
Well, I do have a piece of feedback for you, and I told Vinny this as well. So overall, I love the site, but I do have one minor quibble, and maybe this is something you could put on your list of things to do, but the only complaint that I had was that I felt like I had to be watching it constantly, where, you know, the way that my job works is I do quality control and I work on files. So what'll usually happen in my workday is I'll spend about 30 to 45 minutes, maybe an hour working on a file, and then when that file is done, I'll quick check my phone, see what's happening on Twitter or Facebook, but then I have to get back to work. And I felt like there were times where in between files, I'd go on Puka and I'd hit my little button and I'd be like, oh, nobody wants my stuff. Okay, go back to work. And the people that were having a lot of luck were the people that could refresh. And I don't have the luxury of doing that. And Vinny had mentioned that there was a Chrome add-on or a Chrome extension where he was like, oh, well, I have this thing and it just does it every so intervals. And I'm like, I'm not tech girl. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that does. So, that's the only thing that kind of keeps me from using PukaTrade is I don't have the luxury of watching it constantly. And it just seems like whenever I do check in on it, I've just missed something or somebody doesn't want it anymore. And I feel like I miss a lot of opportunities that way because I can't constantly watch it.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely true. I mean, trades get snatched up lightning fast. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who are really itching to send cards out. And that's kind of one of the beautiful things about it, I have to say, is that when you're on the receiving end of that, the moment you put a card on your want list and bam, it just gets snatched up immediately, it feels incredible. But I completely understand that as a sender, if you're not on the, if you just have slightly less reaction time than whoever got to it first, it can be sort of a letdown where you really want to send a card. You wanted to have that opportunity to participate and give. And, that is definitely a huge challenge that we're going to have to look at because, it does definitely reward the people who are refreshing more or are, quicker to the draw, so to speak. We've thought of a couple solutions for this, but nothing I feel 100% comfortable with. Mm-hmm. One idea that was suggested to us was the idea of trade reservations, whereby someone could say, okay, look, I don't want to be clicking refresh all day. I just want to send out this Vraska the Unseen, maybe this back when it was a $35 card when Return to Ravnica just came out. They said, look, I just want to send out Vraska. I don't want a player, and I just want, you know, I just want to get it out as soon as possible. I want to be the next in line to do this. And then, I don't know, maybe they could, like, pay 10% of the card's value or something like that to be the next in line. And then, basically, as soon as someone wants the Vraska, we just sort of auto-connect them. We automatically say, okay, this person has reserved the right to send this card to you, or, you know, they've reserved the next trade. And then the moment that it becomes available, we just connect them in that way and maybe shoot the sender an email with their contact details. And I like that. There's a lot about that I do like. I think it's it would be a way that, you know, people who didn't want to sit there and click refresh all the time could, you know, have easier access to trades. But I haven't moved forward with it, because I guess one concern that I have is that it might negatively impact the people who are going to the send a card page and not paying, you know, and I didn't until I understand what sort of impact that might have on people's ability to find cards just naturally the way we're doing it now. I don't want to actually implement something like that. But I do think there are other ideas like that that we could explore.
It was frustrating for me particularly because I had good cards at the time. So this was right around the time Theros came out. And I'm sitting on three Elsbeths. And I'm like, hello, I have Elsbeths. Take my Elsbeths. And I click and nobody wants my stuff. And I'm like, I have good cards. Like, I have a place of the Thoughtseize. Here, people, take my Thoughtseizes. And, you know, I'm like trying to give people what they want. And I'm trying to get the cards to the people who want them because I didn't want them at the time. And I was just like, somebody's going to want these. And it just happened to be the times I clicked on it. Nobody did. And then I was like, man, like, I have good cards. Like, I want you to have them and enjoy them because they're sitting here collecting dust. And, you know, I just wanted someone to have them. I didn't care, you know, who was the first or who had the most points. Just take my cards. Use them.
yeah, no, I totally get that.
Yeah.
Well, what about this? Tell me about this. How would you like this? What if we had, I don't know, some sort of mobile app or maybe something like the auto refresh thing that you were talking about before, where the moment a card became available that was on your have list, you got a little push notification on your phone or a little noise that was like, bink, you know, there's a trade available.
Absolutely.
Yeah, something like that.
I'm all for
that. So we kind of explored that idea, but then what we realized is, what if there are 250 people or 500 people who have Thoughtseizes on their have list, right? So then one becomes available, 500 people get a notification about it, but that only one person still is able to get the trade. So we've essentially sort of like spammed or irritated 499 people so that one could feel good about getting it, you know?
That's a good point. Then you're like the Amber Alert of magic cards.
I know, yeah. So anyway, I'm sure there's got to be a good fix for it. We definitely know that, you know, it's something we got to look a little bit more closely at, and yeah, we just want to make sure that when we do roll out kind of like the next feature or the next thing that kind of attempts to resolve it, that it's the right thing and that it actually is really good and positive for trade and. Yeah, but thank you so much for the feedback. I love hearing stuff like that, and if it makes you feel any better, your experience is common. I do get that feedback from time to time. Yeah. But we will try to work on that, absolutely.
One thing I will say to anybody listening to encourage them to try Puka Trade, one of the things that I got out of Puka Trade as an up-and-coming podcaster was I would put in my promotional stickers along with my trades. So when I would send a trade to somebody, I would send them a sticker. And I would say, hey, you should check out the Deck Tees. And that was a good way to get my show out there.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I even had listeners know it was me. Like after a while, I would you know, have trades of people that happened to listen to the show. And then I would get little love notes from them, like, love your show. And it's like, oh, it would turn this lovely little moment. And, you know, so if anybody's listening and you've got a blog to promote or you've got a podcast to promote and you want to, you know, while you're sending your trades, you want to slip a little something, go ahead and do it. It's a great way to cross promote.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's so cool to hear. There's actually lots of weird little secret things about Puka Trade like that that you'll discover once you kind of dive in. I mean, in that way, it's like it's kind of like modern pen pals.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I found that it's very common for there to be two people or three people that have actually really similar wants and needs, or similar wants and haves, I guess I should say. and that you'll end up kind of doing trades with one or two people over and over and over, and be like, oh, I'm getting a package from Don Wiggins again. You know, and it's kind of cool to have that back and forth in that way, where you're really just mailing cards across the world with someone else who happens to have whatever you're looking for. And I think that's really neat.
On a personal note, you did an interview with Gathering Magic last year, and you talked about your girlfriend. And you had made a comment about how you have different interests. And even though you do, you said it was still very important to understand that those interests fuel your passion for life. Do you think that's something that's lacking from relationships? Because I feel like I see a lot of geek couples that have differences in that regard, where, you know, they either geek out on different things or one's more passionate than the other, and it just leads to conflict. Like, would you agree with that?
Well, I'm actually not positive that I'm allowed to be an authority on the subject, because me and that girl actually broke up.
Oh my goodness. Did your passions tear you apart?
You know, it's possible, I guess. I mean, I still, thinking back on that relationship, I still believe that one of the amazing things that we did have going for us was that she was passionate about aerial gymnastics, actually. She did, like, aerial rope and fabric and stuff like that, and it was awesome.
Like in the
circus?
So cool.
Yeah. So she was super dedicated and awesome at what she did, and, you know, all I could do is appreciate and admire that, and I loved that. And there was definitely parallels to be made between her projects and what she was working on, and you know, my focus on Puka Trade. And in a lot of ways, both of those hobbies are really, like, esoteric. You know, they're, like, likely to be understood by only a small number of people with a specialized knowledge or interest, you know? And so I could, as an outsider, I could kind of see what she was doing with the aerial stuff and appreciate it, but it was not actually something I could participate in. And I think the same was true for her, both with magic and, this Puka Trade at large. And I'm not going to say that tore us apart, but I think that it did lead to us growing apart a little bit, in that, a lot of the things that I would get super excited about, I'm not sure, you know, it's not that she wouldn't understand them, she couldn't participate in it. She wasn't really, like, a part of it. And I think the same was true for a lot of her performances and stuff. So, I still believe that it's important for any couple who has something similar going on to be sort of, like, appreciative and supportive. I lost the actual question, I guess.
I mean, it sounds like you, I mean, would you prefer that you had a hobby that you could have both partaken in? Like, do you think that would have helped, or just helps in general for other people?
I think it does help. Mm-hmm. I think it does help. It's something to share. It's definitely something for two people to share. I'm reminded of this couple that are good friends of mine that just got married up in Portland, actually. And I went up to their wedding. And while I was up there, I was actually watching them play basketball. They both liked basketball, you know, and they're playing together on opposite teams. And they're just, like, schooling each other and, like, obviously just having a total blast. And I don't know. I think having hobbies and interests that overlap, both people can share, is actually really important. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's crucial, but I think it's important. Mm-hmm.
Is being a geek a requirement to date you? Like, do you do better with geeky ladies?
I don't know. I don't think I can say I do better or worse with them.
Okay, because I have to date a guy who's a geek to some capacity. I have tried dating what I call mundanes, and it just doesn't go very well. Like like you said, they don't understand. It's sort of like how sometimes when you hear women complain about their men who enjoy football, and they're like, well, he's ignoring me all Sunday. It's like, no. It's not that. And it's kind of the same thing, like, you know, when you have somebody who plays a computer game, like when I played World of Warcraft, I was raiding for 3 days a week. I would raid for 4 hours a night for 3 days. And somebody who's a geek is going to understand that. They're going to go, oh, it's just a raid. It's not me. It's not personal. It's not worrisome. It is what it is. And somebody who's not who's not into that is not going to get it. And they're going to be like, why are you avoiding me? Like, why are we not spending every minute together? Is something wrong? Are you okay? And it's like, no. And it's just a lot smoother when they understand, and they're geeks too. So I feel like I need to date a guy.
I'm just doing what I love doing, right?
Right. And I feel like people who are nerdy or geeky too understand that. And we don't have to geek on the same things, but they need to be in the geek continuum somehow. Like, they either need to like their shooting games, or they need to like their dice games, but you've got to geek on something. Otherwise it just doesn't work. And I didn't know if that was the same for you.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of truth to that. And I guess, in my situation, she was geeking out on the aerial stuff. So yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, like, geeking out on something is just getting really interested and into it, right? And you can geek out on anything. And so I would say that it is a requirement of anyone that I date that they geek out on something, that they get super interested or inspired or just into something. You got to have passion for life and interests in the world around you, and that's definitely a requirement for anyone I ever date.
Now, one of the things you're passionate about is EDH. I found your profile on PookaTrade, and I think you had a dozen EDH decks.
Yeah.
You have a bit of a problem.
The count might be up to 14 now, actually.
14. Now, are we talking 14 as in you have the cards for each of them, or do you have to like sometimes pull cards from one to fuel the other?
Oh, no, I hate doing that. Okay. Yeah, no, I just get to, once a deck is built, it's built. And then it's a project that's completed, and I move on to the next one. I mean, I'll definitely, as new sets come out or new cards come to my attention, I'll tinker and kind of refine and, try to, like, quote-unquote optimize or whatever. But for the most part, every deck's got its own cards, and it's its own entity. It was actually really hard to choose a deck I like the most.
Which one's your favorite?
I think it's got, well, it's kind of a toss-up between two, but I think it's going to go to Selenia Dark Angel.
Love her!
Yeah, I know, she's pretty awesome. This is a really fun deck. It kind of, it's all built around her middle mechanic, or her her pay to life. Well, I should just read this card for those who don't know. Okay. It's a 3/3 flying angel for black, white, and three. And it says, Selenia counts as an angel, and says, pay two life, return Selenia to owner's hand. So one cool thing about that right off the bat is that she can't die, but more importantly, you can actually stack those pay two life triggers on top of each other. Mm-hmm. So what this gives you is like pretty incredible granular control over your life total. Granted, it's going in the down direction, but this deck attempts to exploit that. There's actually a lot of, so it's I kind of have everything divided into two gap categories, things that you can pay life to do, and then things that, I guess then like ways to gain massive amounts of life back, and then other ways to switch life totals. Mm-hmm. Okay, so on the pay life spectrum, it's got things like Necropotence, of course, Minion of the Wastes, Hatred, Ad Nauseam, I don't even know how to say this one. Necrologia. just things that let you say, I'm going to pay like massive amounts of life to get this crazy effect. And then on the other hand, it has things like Children of Corlys and Tainted Sigil that say, sacrifice this, you gain life equal to the life you've lost this turn, right? So you're basically dumping your life into these things and then just cracking these little guys and getting it back. There's also like Eternity Vessel does the same thing. So it's just like paying life, getting it back. And then the really fun stuff is like Reverse the Sands and Mirror Universe and then Repaying Kind.
Ew.
It's so fun. I love it. I got to say. It's silly. I mean, Reverse the Sands costs 8. Mirror Universe costs 6. Like, the likelihood of actually resolving this stuff is pretty crazy, but when it works, I tell you, it feels pretty good.
But to me, that's the point of EDH. Like, I love that you can. I don't get to play EDH very often, and I'm not the biggest fan of it. Like, I can play it and I enjoy it, but I don't fiend for it. I don't crave it. I don't have to play it or anything. I don't immediately think of it when a new set comes out. But when I do play it, I love the throwing up your arms and just going, whee! Just, I have a 34-34 Omnath, and I'm going to sacrifice it to Momentous Fall, and we're going to have a gay old time. And that's what I love about EDH. I love when you can just sort of live the dream and just do those crazy things that you shouldn't be allowed to do. And you may not win, but you're going to have a damn good time on the way out. And just, I love that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, we got a lot of that stuff going on in my play group, a lot of creative minds who are building crazy decks. We got like a color hack deck that Mitch built, and I don't know, every deck imaginable. It's pretty crazy. That's one thing I feel really lucky about, is that I feel like my playgroup is actually a really creative bunch where, you know, we're not just trying to do like jam a bunch of broken staples into a 100-card deck and then sit down and stomp face. Everyone's trying to do like crazy, wacky, zany stuff. They're trying to bend the game, and like, I don't know. I feel like there is this like unspoken rule that like style points are the real win, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily who ends up taking the table down, but whoever does the coolest shit. And yeah, so it's been really cool. We definitely have some good games around here.
It's neat that you have that social contract, because one of the problems I have with EDH is the, you know, you go into it thinking it's going to be that sort of EDH game, and then all of a sudden someone has an infinite combo on turn 5 and you're done. And
yeah.
You thought you were going into a fun game, they thought they were going into Crush, and because it wasn't stated, that social contract wasn't there, it gets really awkward. So the fact that you have a group that you're all on the same page, that's something I would enjoy, and I would love to be a part of it. And I would probably play EDH more if I had that, rather than the, are they for fun? Are they gonna, I don't know. And then you just have to find out the hard way.
Yeah. One thing I actually started doing, especially when I play with people I don't know, is say, like, what kind of EDH do you guys play? Like, tell me about your decks a little bit. Like, are you doing fun stuff? Are you casual? Or like, would you say that your decks are quote unquote optimized? Like, how do you like to play? And if you just have like even just like 2 minutes of dialogue before a game, a lot of times people can find the decks that match. But I think the bad feelings are when somebody sits down to just be wacky and then just gets completely crushed by the guy with the fellows or whatever.
Yeah. I lost to a girl that was playing, it was a goblin deck, and I'm trying to remember the pieces. It was like Goblin Surgeon, Goblin Matron, I think, and then like Lightning Crafter or Crafter. Something with like championing a goblin and then regenerating a goblin and then just all sorts of fuckery. And like I said, I'm playing an Omnath deck, so I'm playing Slow Burn. I have 5 forests, which is nothing in an Omnath deck. And she's like, well, I'm done. Next game. And I was like, no. You need to tell me what you just did here. And I was really upset about it. And then she had the nerve to like turn around on me. She's like, oh, Aaron, don't do this. And I'm like, what? Like, I thought this was a fun game. And suddenly I was issues girl and I was drama girl. And I just didn't think it was going to be like that, you know?
Yeah. I know what you mean. Well, if it's any consolation, I'm pretty sure I've lost to that combo in EDH as well.
Let's get him, Eric.
Yeah.
Minus
sure.
1,000 Puka points. So with
Love
that
it.
Said, where do you see yourself and where do you see Puka Trade in like the next 2 or 3 years? Like, what are your goals?
Well, I wanna hammer out those 4 things I said earlier. Like, we gotta get foreign, I wanna get condition, quantity, and moto. And honestly, that's probably 2 years worth of work right there. I mean, we're certainly going to try to accomplish it faster than that if we can. We're going to do our best. I want to be full time on this Puka Trade thing. I want the whole team to be in on it all the time, making it the best it can be. So, you know, I think realistically that probably happens when we got 30,000 people trading on the site. We double our numbers, and I think we pretty much get there. That sounds like a great goal. I want to get, you know, 30,000 people on the site by June of next year, and I want to get 60,000 on by 1 year from today. Let's say those are the goals. That's where I want to be.
And you think you've got a pretty good shot of obtaining them, like realistic goals?
Oh, I do actually. Yeah, I think now, especially with Vinny's help, we've been able to do more outreach, and we've been able to kind of get the word out a little bit more. And we're going to focus on that a little bit. We're going to make sure everybody's heard of us, and the people that want to are trading on the site. And I do believe that we can get there. We're definitely growing fast. So, you know, at this time, we're signing up about a couple thousand people every month. And I think if things continue this way, we're going to do just fine in that way.
Well, I am certainly rooting for you, Eric, and I hope that, you know, being on this show will expose you to some more people and that I can help you reach your goals. I do think the site is doing good things. You've certainly inspired me to get back on Puka Trade, because I actually lost my trade binder in a suitcase last month. So,
oh, no!
I know. So I've had to like, slowly rebuild my collection, but I am starting to get those excess rares. Like I got this card called Goblin Rabble Master. Like, I guess it's something the kids like, and I wouldn't be caught dead playing with it. So if some poor bastard wants to use it and whack off behind goblin tokens, I will throw it on Puka Trade and he can have a good time. So
that is probably happening 10 places in America right now.
So that's what I'm about. I do have those cards I certainly won't use, and if somebody wants to give them a home, I will go on Puka and make that happen. So
right, that's awesome. Well, I'm so glad to hear it. Thank you so much for the positive feedback. I'm glad we got you back on the site.
Absolutely. And if anybody has enjoyed your appearance, Eric, and they want to know more about Puka Trade, how can they find out more? How can they get a hold of you?
I think the best way is Twitter, actually. I love Twitter. It's been pretty fantastic. But yeah, I'm at Puka Trade on Twitter. Puka Trade is spelled P-U-C-A, Trade. You can also shoot me an email. My address is Eric, E-R-I-C, at PukaTrade.com. Yeah, we're also on Facebook and all the other social media sites. But definitely drop by, say hello. Hope you check out the site. You could also drop me a message on the site through our little personal message system. But yeah, definitely do that. Say hello and give us feedback, because like we just said, we love hearing it.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the show, Eric.
Thank you so much for having me, Eric.
You're welcome. And if anybody else has enjoyed what you've heard here on The Deck Tees, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The show is on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review and some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at The Deck Tees. You can keep up with me on Twitter at Original Estrus. And you can also email me personally at Estrus@ElitistJerks.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.